My name is Jim Brandt, and the series I'm doing this week is called Conversations with Fellow Travelers. And in the first two sessions this week, I dealt with two individual figures, Julian of Norwich, who is a 15th century mystic, and then yesterday we dealt with Nell Morton, who is a contemporary of ours, and a theologian of sorts. Today, and in the next 2 days, we're going to do something rather different, and instead of looking at some individuals and trying to have conversation with them, we're going to look at some cultural groups within North American culture and see what we can learn by conversation with these different cultural groups. I was teaching in an elder hostel earlier this spring in Kansas City, where I live, and I was doing something like what I've been doing here, looking at different figures from history and talking about their theology and talking about how that might relate to our own faith journeys. And in the class, there was a retired pastor who'd been a pastor in the Reformed Church in America. And he and I had kind of an interesting week together. But at one point he said, "Boy, you sure teach theology different from the way I learned it when I was in seminary." And then what he said was, "You're so psychological in your approach." And it was kind of really striking to me when he said that. And it certainly makes some sense. I don't approach theology primarily in terms of doctrines and saying, here's the doctrines that the church believes and here's why we believe it. But especially because I do historical theology, what I try to do is look at the theology of a particular person and see how that theology, how what they believe about themselves, about God, about the world, how that evolves out of their life and their story. And in that sense, there is a lot of psychology going on in what I try to do. Although when I have a real psychologist here like Nancy, I get kind of nervous.
I was just going to say, there could be worse things in life.
I do like the interplay between religion and psychology. It's something that really does fascinate me, and it helps me. What I do know of psychology, which is not a whole lot, does help me in my theological work. But the other thing that really struck me about what that pastor said was that when I think about my own journey and my own work, I tend to think first about sociology as the other discipline that I'm really concerned about. When I was a college student and a seminary student, I was always really concerned with social issues. And then as I went on and got my seminary training and did my doctoral work, I was concerned about the relationship between our faith and ethics. The relationship between our faith and how we as a church address social issues. And so, the other thing that was real striking to me about this person's comment was that, I tend to think of myself as really wanting to think sociologically, think about society. And so that's what I'm going to do in this session and in the next two. And the book, which I need to put a plug in, is available in the bookstore, in the Holden Village store. The book that I'm drawing most of what I'll be doing these days from is a book by one of my colleagues at St. Paul School of Theology, so I'm very, very proud of this individual. name is Tex Sample, and I read a review of this book, and the reviewer said, when I first saw the book, I thought, I don't think this can be very good, because somebody with the first name of Tex, can they really do anything? But actually, I think, and that is his real first name, Tex. And the title of the book is U.S. Lifestyles and Mainline Churches. And then the subtitle is A Key to Reaching People in the 90s. And what he's trying to do in this book is sort through the different cultural groups that exist in North America and try to gain some insight into what's going on with different cultural groups and then think about how do we in the church ministry to people who are in different places in a way that they might be able to hear. And to start, I'm just going to read you from the very introduction, and this will get us started thinking about it. This will lead us into thinking about these different cultural groups. Mary is from Kansas City, where her parents live, and now works and makes her home in St. Louis. She and Mike live together there without benefit of clergy. The arrangement is a matter of no little consternation on the part of her mother and father. In fact, her lifestyle has been a problem for them since she reached her teens. Now, 30 years old and not married, Mary has no plans for the immediate future, much different from the present pattern of her life. She has not settled on a career, and neither has Mike. She sees herself as living out her own agenda and refuses to settle into some rut because of the expectations of others. While she is not affluent, Mary did graduate from college, but she and Mike so far have turned away from pursuing careers in the way their fathers had done. Mary's failure to make career plans and her unwillingness to commit herself to marriage simply baffle her parents. This, plus the fact that she does not go to church, leaves them wondering how they failed her. While they often argue with her and beg her to be sensible, deep down they believe that the fault is finally theirs. While they have been a very successful family, they feel that somehow they have been failures as parents. I don't know, you can start to think if you resonate with either side of this as we go along. And last fall, Mary called home from St. Louis. And here's the conversation. Mom, Mike and I want to come for a visit. Oh, you're going to bring Mike? That's fine. He can sleep in the guest room. Mother, Mike and I sleep together all the time. We can just stay in my old room. Not in this house, you won't. Mother, don't be antediluvian. My dear, in this house there never has been a flood. All right, have it your way. But we really do need to have time to talk. You see, Mom, I'm pregnant. Long silence. Then, oh, my, then you and Mike want to talk about getting married? Well, no, Mom. We don't intend to get married at this point. Then, you want to talk about getting an abortion? No, Mother. We want to talk about keeping the baby. Oh, my, my, my. When Mary's mother hung up the phone, her first thought was how to tell her husband. But then she worried about how she would tell Mary's grandparents. Her parents, and her husband's parents still live in a small town in rural Missouri. Or if you're, as I'm supposed to say, because I'm from there now, Missouri. Hardworking, wage-earning people, they made great sacrifices to get their children through college and now draw enormous pride from their success. They are the backbone of their local church and are deeply committed to traditional values and morality. It will just kill them when they find out, Mary's mother said to herself. And there is no way to keep it from them. Okay, so here we have this little vignette. And we have sort of three sets of people here. You've got Mary and Mike, who are living together in St. Louis. And then we've got Mary's mother. And what we know about them. And then we've got Mary's grandparents. Okay. Now let's just, if you'll just, to get us started, tell me back what you heard about, what did you hear about Mary and Mike? Well, let's start with them and then we'll move to talk about Mary's mother and Mary's grandmother. What do you remember about Mary and Mike? What did you hear about them?
Typical 20s.
Okay.
Generation.
Okay.
California, please.
Okay. Typical 20s. All right.
Well, 30. She's 30.
She's 30. Okay. So they're about 30. All right.
They're together.
Living in Sin.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Living in
Sin. Okay. Pregnant. Mary's pregnant. Okay.
They have no intention of getting married.
No intention, so they're going to stay this way for a while, right?
They're broke.
No
career.
No career. Right?
And no career plans.
Right. No career plans.
I didn't wonder why they'd even bother.
Pardon?
I figured they were already broke because they had to go to their parents.
No, they didn't.
Well, that's all right. No, I don't want to argue that.
Well,
they're satisfied.
Okay. They seem, from what we heard, they're. Why do you say that? I heard anyone disagree with that. Who said they were satisfied?
I thought they were because I didn't hear that they are.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
If anyone wants to argue with that, that's okay.
Yeah, I argue with that.
All right.
I argue with that. There's no indication one way or the other.
Well, at least Mary has the foundation of a college education. So
okay.
I assume from that that she knows how to think a little bit in a straight line.
That's not at all. All right. You're inferring.
Okay, we do a college education, we heard, though, right? Satisfied, well, it's debated. So,
and we know Dan Quayle would not approve of that.
No, I like what's going on here.
She wants to keep the baby.
She's been sort of rebellious since teenage.
Okay. Yeah. Keep the baby.
She is now seeking guidance for her parents.
They
want to talk, but why do they have to go to the parents' house to talk? If she wants to talk to Mike, they're living together and they can certainly talk in their own kitchen.
Right.
So if she says she wants to talk about it, it didn't say with whom. But I think it's a pretty strong inference that she wants to talk with her mother because she's making a trip to that house.
What do you think she wants to talk to her mother about?
Now this has to be projecting all my feelings on Mary.
Go ahead.
Yeah, but
if someone disagrees, they'll let you know. I'm not worried about this group. What do you think she wants to talk to her?
I think she wants some kind of sanction or approval from her mother.
It's usually what we want from our parents, isn't it?
Absolutely. I'm projecting all that.
Well, okay. Okay, so maybe.
They want assistance. They want assistance from her mother to take care of the baby.
Possible.
Give me guidance or assistance.
Assistance.
Okay.
Or she may just want to forestall the storm that's coming by planning how she lets
her
parents know.
She might just want to inform her.
Yeah, right. That's an announcement. Now hear this.
Just share the news with them.
Well, the cat's already up with Betty.
It already. Yeah, I don't think it implies that she's looking for approval. You know, just all it said was that she wanted.
Okay. So what would you sense? I mean, we don't know for sure, but what would you guess? What would you guess she's going to talk about?
I would say maybe she's 30 years old. She's had her lifestyle for quite a while as an adult, and maybe I'm sure that she knows what her mother's response is going to be. Mm-hmm. So just to give a chance for more communication to happen, so that in further times that there aren't more problems.
Yeah. She probably at least wants her mother's support in
emotional.
Wants her mother to feel good about her having a baby. Mm-hmm. Would you guess? Okay. I would. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you want
having babies too seems to bring out some kind of traditional cultural something, whatever it is.
Uh-huh.
And it's not at all unusual to seek back into those traditional family values, parents, grandparents, and all that.
And it gives
being get baptized.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of times that's when people go back to the church, right? Because was she church?
No.
Not at this point, right? She's been away from the church, but that's part of the rebellion. But it's certainly true that one's relationship with one's parents changes when one becomes a parent often, because you have a lot more sympathy for what they went through, right?
Yeah.
That's really my experience. Okay.
Let me add on. I'm identifying with this a lot. I have a daughter, 30, no career plans, single. she and I had a very distant relationship. I was divorced 13 years ago. She blamed me for it. Uh-huh. And we've had a very distant connection over these years. But in the past several months, and I think a lot of it is just becoming age 30 and has been knocked around enough and begins to identify with herself and where I was at that time or earlier, that there's been a lot of connection. She calls almost daily, wants to get advice on things, wants to be close, wants me to come. She lives in D.C. and I'm in Pittsburgh. Diane and I are in Pittsburgh. Wants me to come and visit. And I think it's just one of those life, as you were saying, you connected with the baby, but I think a lot of it is just stage of life related thing. Wanting to reconnect in a family and feel that unity.
Uh-huh. Okay. So if not approval, could we say it was connection? She's seeking connection?
Acceptance, maybe? Yeah. Even if acceptance may not be the same as approval.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, she said, I want to talk, which means she definitely wants to communicate. She verbalized that.
Yeah. Okay. All right, what sense did we get of, let's jump to Mary's mother now.
She's hurt. She's got a lot of unfinished business with her parents and when they're
Okay, so she's in the middle, isn't she? Yeah.
Like the
she's afraid.
In the middle.
She's afraid.
She's concerned about her daughter. I think she loves her. I think they're loving parents.
Okay. She seemed concerned. How did you, what made you think she's concerned?
Because the problem, she said, what did she say? My
concern.
But she's concerned about the perception of others.
Mm-hmm. Particularly her home.
Her parents.
Yeah.
And her husband. And her husband, even.
Yep. Let's see, about
whose name might be up there, incidentally. You know, you're drawing the three levels.
Yeah, we sort
might,
of left him out.
You left him out, I guess that.
And
Freud tells us there are no accidents.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I just left him out because we don't know anything about him based on that, but we can throw something.
Concerned about parents.
Yeah, and parents. Uh-huh.
She has a set moral code.
Okay.
I put a suggestion in there that...
How do you know that? What makes you...
Well, she doesn't want to sleep together in the same room.
Right.
Yeah, they've been living together for years.
Okay. At my house, you're not going to do that, right? Yeah.
I put a suggestion that the mother would rather have had
her daughter have an abortion than they're living together or being unwed parents.
Uh-huh. What makes you think that?
I was assuming, since church was mentioned and so on, they're concerned that the younger couple was not going to church, but the mother was.
Yeah.
And then after she said, are you going to get married? The daughter said, no, then are you going to have an abortion?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming that she would rather have the abortion than be an unwed.
Okay.
Now, where's the moral question?
Well, let's... Do you agree with that reading? There's not enough to assume that.
She just asked, do you want to talk about an abortion? Well, if you didn't want to talk about getting married, you want to talk about having an abortion? What's going on?
So you don't think that's what the mother wants? It's just she was just trying to find out.
Yeah, I don't think we can tell if the mother really prefers one over the other yet.
Well, she's projecting on her parents, she's projecting on her social, is peers a good word, associates, however you would say that.
Mm-hmm. And then, that's related up here too, and she's concerned about her grandparents.
Concerned about appearances.
How did she feel about what's happening with Mary? Do you remember? Did that strike you?
She was not pleased.
No, she wasn't pleased. There was something else, though.
She blamed herself.
She blamed herself, didn't she? Deep down, it said, deep down she thought she was a failure as a parent. She felt she was a failure as a parent. Okay? Now, in that connection, it said something else about Mary and her husband. What did it say about that?
They wanted to be controlling, and they couldn't accept that it was something different from that Mary was different from themselves.
Okay, they didn't want her to be. I mean, this word really sort of came from Mary, didn't it? That Mary was from Mary's mother. That Mary's mother felt Mary's rebellious.
She wasn't
right, and really would rather that she didn't be rebellious. There was something else about them, though, that was said that they felt a failure as a parent. It did say, real briefly though, that in other ways they were successful family. Yeah.
I question that two things, successful and they were pillars of the church.
Now, who was it? Were pillars of the church?
I'm sorry, grandparents.
That was the grandparents. But it did say, I mean, it said, didn't exactly tell us what they meant by successful, but it did say that they had been a successful family. And
was that an editorial comment, or was that the mother's words?
I think that was editorial. Yeah, I mean the writer.
Well, they had sacrificed for the
grandparents. No, it's
the grandparents.
Okay, we better move to the grandparents, because I think we're there. What did we say about them?
To go back to the mother, is there any blame here? Is anybody blaming anyone, like the daughter blaming the mother?
I think the only blame, what I heard, others of you can argue with me, what I heard was the only, that Mary's mother was blaming herself.
Yeah.
That no one else was blaming her, but that she felt responsible, that she must have gone wrong.
Well, why did she feel responsible? Maybe she was too hard-nosed bringing up her kids. I've seen that happen with a family where, you know,
toe
the line, and then when they got to be of age, then things started to happen.
Yep. I mean, so we don't. I mean, that's again, that's something we're not going to know for sure. Okay, let's talk about the grandparents. What did we know about them?
They must be very old. You've got four generations going there.
Yeah. Let's guess. Mary and Mike are 30. Mary's mother is, who knows, 50s. So the grandparents have got to be 70s, right? Something like that, okay? Okay, what else do we know about the grandparents?
They'd be 90, wouldn't they?
They could be.
They
have parents.
What else did it say? You already mentioned one thing.
Pillars
of the church. All four.
Traditional values,
Yes, it said they held strongly to traditional family values, right?
I got the idea that they weren't well educated, but they worked very hard to get mm-hmm. education for the next generation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But you never hear from the grandparents how they feel.
No,
it's just
we don't.
The mother's interpretation.
Right. Right. So we don't. Yeah, that's true.
So it might be what she says or it might not.
Mm-hmm.
Proud
of their children. Okay. Likely placed all of their pride in their children. One other detail that's important here. It may have slipped by. Yeah.
You have four grandparents, and you never really differentiate between them.
No, you don't. I mean, they don't get developed much. Yeah. So.
Which is highly unlikely they all be the same.
Yeah. Pardon? I'm sorry.
I think it'd be highly unlikely that they were all a uniform group.
Yeah.
Might be.
There's one other detail about them that's really important. Maybe it's
they live in a small town.
Yeah, and they all live in the same rural place. Right, in rural Missouri. Right, but they're all in the same place. Okay. Alright, Tex uses this story to get the book started, because what he wants to do in this book is say, what are the basic cultural groups that exist in our North American society? And what he said, what he comes down saying is that there are basically three different cultural groups. And what they are, what he calls them, are the cultural left, the cultural middle, and the cultural right. Now, you've got to be careful here. We hear those words left, middle, and right, and sometimes we think about theology or we think about politics, but that's not what we're talking about here. If you think politically left, middle, and right, you'll get all confused. We're talking culturally left, middle, and right, and it's not the exact same thing as what we mean by political left, middle, and right. And today, what we're going to concentrate on is this group here on the left. Well, I want to ask you a question, and then if you have questions about this, I'll say some more. But what do you see in terms of values? What do you hear as values here? What do you hear as values here? What do you hear as values over on your side? What do they value? Yeah.
Independence.
Okay. Why do you hear that? How do you hear that over here on the left?
Because they're doing their own thing.
Okay. Doing your own thing, right? Yeah. The cultural left, well, I will say this much, is primarily the baby boomers. Not exclusively.
Baby boomers are getting a little old for that.
Yeah, they're
old.
Right. And that's what things have changed some. But
yeah.
Baby boomers were folks born between 1946 in 1964, how many of us in here are baby boomers? Yeah.
Wow.
A third of us, huh? Okay. And I forget the numbers, but there's a huge, what is it, 40 or 50 million baby boomers, and Tex, the author of the book, is not a baby boomer, but like everyone, I mean, we're all, whether we're baby boomers or not, we're all influenced by that generation, because it's so big.
Eight under bone grill.
Yeah.
Cool.
Right. So you gotta, whether we like it or not. Okay.
And then other values.
Independence, we heard.
Independence.
Yeah.
At the same time, they highly value family because they are concerned for the mother enough to call, and they are having a baby.
Okay.
So they have some family values.
Some sense of family values, okay.
not the family value, that they're not too hot on marriage, are they, at least this particular couple, but...
We don't know what understanding they have as they're living together. A lot of couples have a variety of commitments.
Well, but the traditional, they have not, married by clergy, that we heard...
Made it legal.
Is not right. Okay. Is not present there. What else?
I think it's
selfish, right?
They don't care. She certainly knows how her mother and grandparents feel about it and all. When she talked that over with them before she lived with her.
Okay.
Yeah, is that the kind of meaning? But I'm sure they didn't agree with her.
Uncommitted, perhaps.
Uncommitted, at least in terms of marriage.
In terms of job, and in terms of...
And in terms of getting good.
What we're doing right now is attributing to baby boomers based on the story we've just heard. And I'm not sure if the story typifies, unless it was specifically written to typify the average baby boomer.
It was, and if we were to read the book together, we'd see that Tex has done a lot of research on... Not all baby boomers are cultural left. Okay, so that is probably helpful to say. But the cultural left is strong among the baby boomers. You might not be a baby boomer, but you might be cultural left. Mm-hmm. So, for example, in my class yesterday, we dealt with a figure called Nell Morton. And Nell Morton was a person who was born in 1905. She has a lot of cultural left in her, but she's not a baby boomer. So it's... So what we're dealing here, you see, this is a sociological term, and we talk about... We're dealing here with types. The type of the left, the type of the middle, the type of the right. And types are not exact. They don't apply exactly to any individual. They're sort of, you sort of paint a type with a broad stroke. So that when, for example, when I have read and studied this book, I discover that in me, I don't fit the cultural left perfectly, although there's plenty of cultural left in me. There's also a lot of cultural middle in me. There's not much cultural right in me. And so you say, well, what good are these types if people don't really fit them exactly? I think they're helpful because they give us some broad categories for understanding certain lifestyles. But then when we come to thinking about particular individuals, we're going to find that no one is going to fit exactly. And for me, one of the ways that this is real helpful is help me understand myself, but also other members of my family. When several of you said selfish over here. That tends to be the perception of, we who are part of this would say, would probably not use that word. We'd probably use a little different word, but it certainly can look selfish as someone who's in a slightly different place.
Yeah. Just thinking about the word independent.
Yeah.
I mean, they probably think that they're following their own values, but actually they're following their own cohort, and it's it's not that independent.
Mm-hmm. Also, a lot of what they're doing is motivated by the need to bounce off the other two. It's
so
the direction more than the actual independence.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So there's a lot of ways in which cultural left folks are defined by reaction against certain things, and that is crucial. We'll get more into that in a minute. Yeah.
Of course, the selfish or self-centered trait could apply to the middle. Mary's mother is very self-centered and concerned about her reputation, about her values.
Well, I'm seeing more similarities between Mary's mother and the grandparents here. Not too much that puts her in the middle as much as she and her parents seem more aligned.
Yeah.
Leaning more, you know, left and right. I can see a real distinction between left and right.
Okay.
As I'm watching that board there, I get the, I like the perspective to the left. I visualize a cycle of what's going on in human living.
Uh-huh.
You go from the pure right to a little less and a little less.
Uh-huh.
And after a while, society will have gone down so far that it has to right itself.
Uh-huh. So there's
now, who is to say that as we go, that we could keep that board going?
Mm-hmm.
That way to the left, that maybe what's on the left right now, Mary, would be right, okay?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then on and on.
Right, right.
And then you can say to yourself, well, who's wrong here? I'm thinking of all this beautiful land out here, and I'm thinking of, we'll say bears.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they don't have human intellect, but they always live the same life, I think.
Yeah.
You know, they have their babies, they teach them how to hunt, and this, that, and the other thing. And life goes on just like that. Just because we have human intellect, we somehow mess ourselves up. It's true in the Old Testament, in the Bible, you read it. One generation, they got a good king, and everything is going great. The first thing you know, they start worshiping idols.
Mm-hmm.
And then there, you know, and it goes in cycles. And I think that's pretty much the way we live anyway.
Yeah.
We're always on the go and a changing, foolish society.
I'm not much interested in the question of who's right here.
Yeah.
What I'm more interested in is trying to understand the different lifestyles and why folks are the way they are, so that, I mean, especially finally, because of the business I'm in, which is training ministers, so that folks in ministerial work can understand where people are at, how they look at the world, and be able to address the gospel to them in an appropriate way. I mean, there are some places where I really would want to argue about what's right and wrong, but basically here I'm more interested in understanding and seeing, and not, I don't want to be judged, I don't want the left to be judged terribly harshly. I don't think the other side is deserving. I do want to respond a little bit also to the question about the middle and the right. I mean, they sound the same to us today, and we're going to shift in a minute here, and really, I'm going to flesh out the left, because today is the left. The middle and the right do seem, can seem kind of the same today. So let me just say a couple sentences to start to help us see what the difference is. When the text talks about the right, the main characteristic of the right is that they are local people. That is, they're people who tend to be tied to a particular locality. And that's, we saw it real briefly in the fact that all four grandparents live in the same small town that they've lived in all their lives, presumably. Whereas the people in the center, and so these people are defined, people on the cultural right are defined primarily in terms of identification with a place where they've probably been for generations. People in the middle are people who are primarily focused on career. And that means that these are the folks who have probably moved around quite a bit. Tend to be professionals, tend to be pretty successful in the middle here in terms of financial and social status and those kinds of things. And
could you define them by being people who have settled?
Well, they've settled on career, but they often are folks who are, you know, moving
they're
around the country.
More socially settled is what I'm having.
Whereas
the left is floating,
The
middle is settled, and the right has roots that are deep.
Yeah, and they have roots that are deep, but the right tends not to have
the social status. So if we look at class issues, we're looking at a lot of blue-collar folks. Most blue-collar folks are going to be here. And most white-collar and professional folks are going to be here.
Ooh, then...
Oh,
well...
Well, it's also generational, but...
Yeah, because there's a lot of young blue-collar people.
Yeah, well,
and you're going to have trouble sticking them in the middle.
But then they're going to be probably going to be on the right.
That's right.
Or they're going to be combinations. See, a person...
They're not going to fit in your pigeonholes.
No, but see, that's what I was saying before. Nobody does fit perfectly. That's why we call them types, because they help us see some general truths, but when we take any individual and say, okay, now where are you up here? You may, if you're like me, you're going to say, well, I'm here, here, and maybe a little bit here.
Well, are you training these
ministers?
There are
young people on the cultural right. Yeah. I mean, I've known lots of young blue-collar people when we were in Minnesota, particularly, who would never think of moving. Oh, no work this year? There's welfare. Mm-hmm. You know, and we've got a good garden, and we can hunt and fish and so on and so forth. Would never think of living together without being married, would never think of not having kids, not taking care of the grandparents, all that kind of thing. It seems like a generational thing here, because everybody's in the same family, and they are different generations, but I don't think it has to be.
It's not always generational, right?
No, it's time, too. They're products of their time.
They are.
Everyone.
And that's what I want to move to in a minute. Yeah.
I also don't think that takes into account the changing social structures. When we say I'm committed for someone on the left, I'm assuming that that's supposed to be connected with no career plans. But if somebody has a decent job, it's far more difficult now to sustain a career over 40 or 50 years. And that's a reality of the times, not necessarily of a person's level of commitment. And very often they have to accept that they're going to have to change careers midstream at least 4 or 5 times. You know, and certainly I've experienced that.
What?
Better scratch out baby boomers then, because it sounds like out of your left. Because I think you ought to take them out of there. Because they're not going to fit very well in there.
Well, but they, not all, but we can't understand the left unless we see that it emerges out of these people born in this period, and it is a reaction against a lot of what they perceived in their parents. And let me just talk about that. The way text tries to make sense out of it.
I'm going to complain about the years. Those are two broad strips of years for baby boomers. 54 instead of 64.
Can I just bring up an agenda item?
Sure.
I've been sitting in sessions for 3 days now. A lot of it's been informational, but does not address what we will do with this, how it will alter our perceptions, our decisions, our behavior when we leave Holden and get back into our everyday lives. And I would hope that before we ring the bell at the end of this session today, that we can have a little bit of discussion on what this means to us for the programs of our congregations, how we perceive others, how we act.
I hope we get to that.
That may be idealistic, but it's a hope I would
have.
That
is important. It is important.
That's a question. Why? It's not judging. Why are we like this?
But then when we get why we're at this, then that does begin to, I mean, where text goes, you see, is to say, okay, we understand what the cultural left is about, then how are we going to, and suppose we decide a lot of cultural left people around our church, we need to reach them, then he's going to come up and say, here are some suggestions about how we need to do this. Let me work on the cultural left and try to make some sense out of them. And in order to understand them, we got to back up and look at their parents. And so the parents of the baby boomers. Text says, for the parents of the baby boomers, there was, is, an ethic of self-denial. That was the ethic that, by and large, was in place for the parents of the baby. And we heard that. We heard that some saying, looking at Mary here and saying, that sounds selfish to me. Well, if you're coming from this kind of place, it's certainly going to sound selfish. What's the ethic of self-denial? 3 points that are crucial. One is that one does deny self. Deny self for the sake of the family. That this ethic focuses much more on the family unit and much less on the individual. And the individual is expected to sacrifice self for the good of the family. And we saw that, in a sense, we saw that more in the parents, in the grandparents, where it said the grandparents had sacrificed so that the kids could go to college.
Also,
I
have a question.
Yeah.
Could you extend that to denying yourself for the family to the exclusion of yourself, obviously, and then also to the exclusion of the community larger than the family, limiting it on both sides?
Well, sometimes, although this ethic does tend to be concerned about the society and be real committed to, say, our country in a particular way. The second element is that this ethic tends to really emphasize hard work. We need to work hard, again, for the benefit, not primarily of the self, but for the benefit of the family, so that we can take care of our kids, so that we can, so our kids can have a better life than we did. And that's part of the ethic here. And the third one is what text calls respectability. That it really matters what other people think. And we saw that particularly as Mary's mother worried about what are the grandparents going to think. I mean, it's important here to be respected, to be respectable. And what text wants to say, when several people said, we got to look at the history that this comes out of. What text says is that where did this ethic come from and where did it really work? I mean, this ethic got formed out of the experiences of the Depression
and World War II.
Yeah. Yes. And that this worked by and large, for people of that generation. Now, some of you are of that generation, so you can speak to it if you want to and say it. I mean, does that seem to ring true and how did it work? But yeah.
Doesn't a lot of this come out of Europe, of the Puritans who brought the so-called Protestant ethic, which is characterized by hard work, which is characterized by denying oneself for the family? You know, the very first people coming that you don't work, you don't eat. Mm-hmm. It was for the community. And has been carried through that work ethic, that Protestant ethic, which my parents had, which I maintain a lot of, and it's been a historical thing before the Depression.
Certainly, those are some of the roots of it. But some of you can correct me on this, but my sense, well, from my parents and from others that I've known, is that when you're shaped by the Depression and by World War II, I mean, those were times when people felt they had to pull together in order to survive, right? Because those were really hard times, and if we don't do these things, we're not going to make it. So that's the ethic of the parents of cultural left people.
One more thing.
Yeah.
Maybe in parallel to that would be delayed gratification.
Sure.
It's not really.
Sure.
It's sort of in parallel to to the ethic of self-denial.
Yeah. It's delayed. Right.
Delayed gratification is a big thing.
Mm-hmm. 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 Now, a lot of the baby boomers, the cultural left baby boomers, well, not everyone's there, but cultural left baby boomers come along and they react against this in a lot of ways. And instead of an ethic of self-denial, the ethic of the cultural left tends to be an ethic of self-fulfillment. so you can see, a person up here is going to look down at this and say, this looks selfish. And a person down here is going to look up at this and say, what happened? A person in the cultural left looks at a person up here and says, they denied themselves and they never got any fulfillment because they delayed it so long it got away from them. And so,
but you see, in the final analysis, it's going to come back, because if you continue on the road that Mary was going, it's going to cause problems that we're now faced with, AIDS, and all sorts of problems that we didn't have before. And then, well, there's. When you live in a society, you have to live to certain rules, or it goes eight.
But we don't have any information that says Mary is promiscuous.
You know, we pride ourselves in all our freedom here in this country.
Or that says Mary is parasitic.
Which is great. But freedom has a lot of responsibilities connected with it.
Okay, so.
And people ignore that. A lot of them do.
We don't really have information that says that Mary is acting irresponsibly, though.
No, we don't.
We don't know that she's indulging in promiscuous sexuality. We don't know that she's not supporting herself. We do know that she has some commitment to the baby.
Okay, what are the points of this ethic of self-fulfillment? One is that for the cultural left, life is intrinsically valuable, which means you don't have deferred gratification here. Rather, there is a sense of a desire for immediate gratification, because life is good, and you don't want, for these folks, it feels like up here it slips away. They want to have it now.
You live in the moment.
Yeah, it's real present oriented.
I have a hard time with the use of the word gratification at that point, because if you're saying life is intrinsically valuable, I think a lot of these people see life as being enjoyable, not at the expense of somebody else, but just life is there, life is wonderful, they're enjoying it, they're appreciating it. And I don't see necessarily, I think the emphasis on self-gratification is too strong. That's not it.
Yeah, they're too loving for you.
They love life.
Yeah.
And God gave us this life, and they're enjoying it.
Yeah, and we're not going to
delay. And not necessarily at the expense of someone else.
No, right. Okay. The second point is that this, these folks, again, look, they're in a lot of ways reacting against up here. And these folks value creativity and emotional expression. So here, you know, a cultural left, you don't want to be uptight, right? You want to be able to express yourself. And again, everything's relative, but the way that these folks look up at these folks, they say these folks were kind of repressed and kind of let things, put things off. And down here, we don't want to do that. Again, I mean, of course, these are generalities. And there is what text calls a psychology of affluence going on here. That the 50s were relatively affluent times. And cultural left baby boomers came to sort of take that for granted and expect life to be, that the individual is entitled to affluence. And they had a lot of faith in the economy, and that there was a self-fulfillment ethic going on here. And but also seeing that as a lifelong project. Now what let's talk about the churches for a minute. The studies that text cites here in the book show that cultural left folks are by and large not in the churches. Because they don't believe in institutions. What's shaped these people? If these people here have been shaped by the Depression and World War II, what's shaped these people?
Vietnam.
Okay, Vietnam War.
Watergate.
Drug culture.
I'm sorry?
TV.
Yeah.
Drug culture.
The assassinations.
Drug culture.
The drug culture.
Nuclear threat.
And the result of all that is these folks are, in profound ways, Tex would say, alienated. Mm-hmm. Alienated from a lot of traditional values. We saw in the case here of Mary. Alienated from traditional understandings of marriage. Alienated from the church. In many ways, alienated from the country and faith in our country.
And often they're shaped by dysfunctional marriages they've observed in their parents, mm-hmm. and a lot mm-hmm. of divorce.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Which makes them a little bit suspicious of this institution.
That's right. And that's why they'd say, they look at the 50s and say that was a time of maybe affluence, but also a time in which people were committed to institutions even when the institutions didn't deserve kind of like, mm-hmm. like marriage. And so these folks have a lot more reservation about commitment. And in fact, Tex says the cultural left have a hard time making commitments. And they have a hard time with long-lasting relationships. For their shape.
Where does consumerism fit in here? Because on one hand, you hear that the baby boomers are out to make lots and lots of money and be successful, and yet there's this also not being committed to a career and going along with institutions, and yet we are, and then the whole idea that we are much more consumer-oriented now than we were back in Mary's parents.
Yeah, well, because you're not going to say, you don't care about saving money here. You care about the immediate experience. So, if you've got money, I mean, it's probably these folks who have helped make us a nation that doesn't save very much. I think these folks were probably a lot better at saving.
Yeah, so in a way, they would go then along with Reagan and build up the debt. And,
I'm trying to fit that in.
The thing about those people not fitting into church, I'm not so sure. It seems like all these millions of little non-denominational churches that are popping up in rebellion, somewhat rebellious of the right type of church, mm-hmm. or the middle church, where you mm-hmm. kind of do your own thing and create your own kind of congregation. There's a lot of baby boomer age people getting into these kinds of churches.
Well, and the way the text characterizes them is to say that the cultural left baby boomers tend to be believers who don't belong. So they do take spirituality seriously and see their own lives as a spiritual journey, but they tend not to connect with the traditional. So that in terms of the mainline churches, the cultural left are not there by and large. Now there are some other places, you're right, and non-traditional kinds of places. But obviously Texas writing for the mainline church and trying to help the mainline churches think about how might we reach some of these folks. And there it's real important to recognize these folks, on the one hand they're alienated from country and from the institution of marriage and from the church. On the other hand, they really want to belong there, but Tex would say that for most of these folks, they feel like the church doesn't have anything to offer me, because the church feels, to most of these folks, it feels too formal and too go through the motions without any of that intrinsic value or without that emotional expression, you know? A cultural left person, like myself, is going to have a hard time being a Lutheran, right? Because of the way we worship. What a cultural left person wants is a worship that